Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and tonight I'm proud to be bringing you Living Theurgy with Brandi Williams and Tony Mrazewicki. Also, as a note, we're flying back under the banner of Voice of Olympus, which was the name of our first podcast, now maybe over half a decade ago. So onwards, greetings and welcome, fellow theurgists. How are you?
Hi, Hercules. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good, thanks.
And you, Brandi, how are you?
I'm wonderful. It's gotten all fall-like here. Suddenly, like in one day, the temperature changed. It's raining, and we went from running around in shirt sleeves to putting our sweaters on. It's really fun. And how are you? Are you okay after Ida? How are you recovering?
It wiped out a lot of stuff, quite a lot of stuff. But beyond the stuff, everybody's okay. Going through the process of like digging through the wet things and getting rid of the stuff has been oddly cathartic, although sometimes sad. One third of my library was lost, and these are books that I've had since childhood, a lot of them, and they tell a story, and I remembered how I got them, and you know, so I'm going through a whole process with them. But again, it's just stuff. So this will actually free me to focus my energies in other directions. Thank you for asking.
Yes, you bet. You're with the right people to mourn books with you. I really I sympathize. I had a fire and I lost a library. And so it too, long ago. This too will pass. And if you're missing anything in particular, I can check my shelves.
Thank you so very much. I loved your suggestions for today's show and for future shows. Before we get to the suggestions, what is new and exciting in your world? How is Chord Magic doing? You seem phenomenally busy. Anything you care to share?
Not phenomenally busy. Actually, the Chord Magic publicity, the sort of frontlist publicity is winding up, which I'm kind of grateful for. It's a lot of, it's wonderful and it's great fun and it's been well received. I really enjoy the reception the book has gotten. But I'm kind of feeling the tug to go back into writing. So there's this sort of cycle of like going out and interacting with people and, you know, working, publicizing the book and talking to people about stuff. And then I kind of go back in and be a little bit more quiet and do some more writing. So that's kind of what my energy is kind of retreating at the moment. I'm enjoying the whole process and it's going well. Thank you for asking.
I'm glad that your creativity is flowing and that it'll lead to another Brandi Williams book. I'm a very big fan. I have been for very many years since I picked up Ecstatic Rituals.
Yep.
How about you, Tony?
A couple of interesting things coming up. Pagan Pride Day. I'm going to be talking at Pagan Pride Day, which will be on November the 7th. So I'll be able to talk a little bit about theurgy then as part of my talk. Also, there was a guy who was running a Hellenic group in Los Angeles who died a few months ago. There's a memorial service for him coming up on October the 10th. So a number of us are going to be gathering there. So a lot of the Hellenic community from LA will turn up and there'll be a ritual for him. And it's basically memorial service. So I'll be taking photographs there and helping to honor Dean Cameron's memory. It seems that things are opening up slowly and that there are more and more things happening. At least that's what's happening here on the West Coast, whereas it seems to be just the opposite on the East Coast where things are closing down and, you know, mask mandates are enforced and the like. So it's a very interesting time.
That it is. I'll be speaking virtually, though, at Ishtar Fest again this year. And I was invited to speak in other places, but they were in person, so I turned them down for now. So I'm only doing virtual presentations. But those are exciting and challenging, each place has a different format. So in some, you could tell who's there and you could interact with people directly. In others, it's like talking to your television screen for 45 minutes to an hour and a half. So again, it's new things, adjustments, change, and eventually growth. And I guess I'll announce it here first. I've also been approaching publishers about publishing a book rather than just the shorter anthology publications that I've been contributing to. So I'm about to begin that adventure myself.
That's really exciting. Congratulations. Hope it goes well.
Thank you very much. Go ahead.
So I was just going to say, with the two events that I mentioned, both of those are going to be outdoor events. So they're much, much safer there. They're not indoor events. So I'm pretty sure that masks will be required and the like, and there'll be social distancing, but I feel fairly safe in attending them.
Good, good.
Sorry, I interrupted you. Yeah.
No, it's okay. And I will definitely, if you provide me with the links and information periodically, I'll definitely post it and promote it.
Thank you.
Now, Brandy has suggested a few topics. And I like all three of them, and I didn't find any of them too highfalutin, by the way. one is magical personalities. The other is gender in theurgic operation. And the third one is elements. So, Tony, do any of those strike resonance with you?
We can discuss all three, have a stab at them.
Okay.
So we can start with the first one on magic personality.
And I'd love. Am I unmuted? I have to say.
Yes, you're unmuted. You're here.
Okay. Oh, thank you. I'm sorry. I got so excited when you said you were writing a book that I accidentally hung up trying to unmute myself. I wanted to ask you what the book was about. I've wanted to see a book from you for so long, and I totally encourage you. Anything I can do to help, please let me know.
Thank you. Thank you very, very much. I appreciate that. I sent two ideas already. I contacted Llewellyn informally and spoke to some people there. So they were very helpful with their suggestions. I had two ideas. There were outlines of courses that I've given over the years that I haven't given now in maybe half a decade. These were maybe like 12 session workshops, and back then you could do continuous things for long periods of time. The pandemic changed all that for me. The third idea is on the planetary mythology that I've been playing with through the podcast and through the group and so forth. I'm discovering so many fascinating things and new ways of looking at the planets and working with them. And by planets, I mean classical planets mostly. Since I'm totally immersed in that anyway, I thought I'd write an unusual approach to the topic where it would be faithful to who I am and how I do things, and at the same time, not only provide the basic information, but also look at it in a slightly different way, and then give somebody plenty of exercises and techniques to play with and keep busy.
Oh, that's fantastic! And you are so knowledgeable, and then you have worked with people. I know people who write things and sort of imagine rituals and don't do them, and then try to publish them. And you really like worked with people, so it's field tested. So you know that it's helpful to people, which is fantastic. I would love you to join the Llewellyn Theurgists.
that
would be fantastic.
I would love that too. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I'm greatly honored. which do you want to tackle first? Magical personalities, gender and theurgic operation, or elements? And I'll go to Brandy here since you suggested the ideas.
Well, I want to leave magical personalities for when Jean-Louis can join us, because I originally learned that as an Aurum Solis thing, and I'd love to get his contemporary perspective on that. It was his predecessors in the order who sort of wrote the books that generated that. But I'd love to talk to us about elements. We've talked so much about the planets, and I mapped the planets onto the Olympian deities, and that gives you 7, right? But then you have 5 additional Olympians that map onto the elements, and we don't have the same sort of time structure that the week provides us to offer to connect with them, right? And I'm pretty sure Tony's got some ideas and some practices, so I'd love to talk about that if you both would be willing to do it.
I'm for it. Tony?
Sure. The first thing that comes to mind is that we can actually map the elements onto the days of the week. And I was racking my brains trying to remember which text it was, but there was an Israel Regardi text where he mapped the elements onto the Tree of Life. So the correspondences that he used was he mapped fire onto Tiferet, and Tiferet basically corresponds to Sunday, Helios, and it corresponds to the will. He mapped water onto Netzer, so that's Friday and Aphrodite, and it refers to the emotions. He mapped air onto Hod, which is Wednesday, and the god Hermes and intellect, and earth was mapped onto... He combined Yesod and Malkuth together. So that would take us to Monday or Selene. So that basically refers to manifestation in the physical world. So that would take care of the 4 physical elements. And regarding spirit, I assume that you'd probably map spirit onto Bina, which refers to Saturday and Kronos, and it refers to spiritual influence coming in from above. So that would give you 5 days of the week that could be used for working with the 4 elements and spirits.
That's fantastic. Have you done it?
No, I haven't. But the thing is, yeah, I tend to limit myself to the planets. But as soon as you asked that question, I found myself remembering that was one of Regardi's suggestions, and I thought, well, that would be a way of working with the elements on a regular basis, because the days of the week lend themselves to the 7 planets very obviously. Whereas with the elements, not so much. But using that particular attribution system, you could work with them. So in this particular system, you'd be working with the 7 planets, and then you'd be doubling up on 5 additional days.
How do you solve that, Brandy, when in the things that you've tried?
I was just searching for my list of what deities map onto the elements, because the way that I've worked with the deities in time is on the month. Right, so the Olympians map onto the 12 months of the year, but I hadn't thought about remapping them onto the days of the week. And now I'm going to, after we hang up, I'm going to quick like a bunny, like write some things, do some practices, which sounds really exciting. Actually, I'm very excited by that. And I was looking for the specific deities. Athena's ether, Hera is air, and fire is not Hestia. Fire is the craft god.
Hephaestus.
Hephaestus. Poseidon is water, and then Earth is not. I think Hestia is Earth, because Demeter isn't Earth. Demeter is Saturn.
Okay.
Which makes it. Which makes it very interesting, right? So that sounds like a very interesting thing. When I've worked with the elements, I've done so much elemental work in my life, both as a witch and as a Golden Dawn magician. And usually we map the elements onto the the mandala that puts them on the directions, and that maps out onto the wheel of the year, so it maps out onto the Sabbats. And that's kind of how, and then in the Golden Dawn, the elements map onto the four worlds of the Tree of Life, so they become powers, and we work with them in understanding how those powers work in our life. And then it's physical elements, right? So working with water in our life, water is cleansing and fire is empowering and earth is grounding and air is sustaining. And then spirit is wrapping all of those things up. So those are kind of just the ways that I've worked with the elements. But I love, Tony, the idea of putting them back onto the days of the week, because I work with the planets, the planetary influences. Every day, you know, one of them comes by and I just work with it. So it gives me a way to do that. I love that idea.
Yeah, that's basically what I do as well. But the thing is, there are all these different options out there. So it's a matter of trying everything out and seeing what works best for you.
And a lot of those systems are kind of like percussion beds. It's very difficult sometimes to figure out why certain things are attributed. Like right now I'm working with the Zodiac again, and I still can't figure out like why Aquarius is air and not water, since he's the water bearer and so forth. So I play with the possibilities, and it leads me to a greater understanding of what the person who put together the system was thinking or how they reasoned. But I agree with Tony. Eventually and ultimately, it's what works best for you and what you're doing.
Yes, absolutely. Everyone experiments and finds what works for them, and I always validate everyone's experience and experimentation.
I also like working with the days of the week and the planets, and I'm playing now actually in the Hercules and the Planetary Powers group on Facebook with some of these things, you know, with the elements and which elements belong to which gods on which days. Again, started with the classical planets, and I differ from most people in that Heracles is Sunday and Athena is Monday. And they're kind of like the yin-yang symbol, because Hercules has lunar elements and Athena has solar elements. So those are the luminaries. And then the other days correspond with who they normally correspond with. And then the gods of the planets beyond Saturn, I go by which zodiac signs they co-rule with a traditional assignment. I've been playing with that. So they got assigned to those particular days. And now I'm wrestling with what elements should be for a particular day, because those don't match up always very well between the deity and the sign they rule and those that they rule together. Again, there's a lot of messiness still there, so I haven't figured that one out yet.
I love the work that you're doing, and I love that we keep circling back to the deities. I work with the Olympians because they come in as the Hinas, but they also don't include the Chthonic deities, unless you think of them as being in the influence of one of the Olympian Hinads. But it's really the Hinad that's the core of the power that I work with. The idea that there's this force and that there are 12 of them that balance each other in the universe, right? That's really the core of it. So we map those forces out onto planets and elements, but it's really that force that I'm honing in on.
Right. In my meditations, a lot of times it's come to me that even though I like working with the planets, the gods don't necessarily feel the planets are as important as I happen to feel they are. That realization's dawned on me several times. But again, I like working with the planets. It's a very easy way to structure my life, because we have a different day every day. I like every day being a holiday. I really like that. It helps me organize my time and structure my week and get things accomplished. So even if it's not how the gods actually organize themselves, it's a handy tool for humans here. So
And I love your Facebook series too. It's Monday, or you know, it's Sunday. Let's talk about power. It's Friday. Remember to love the people around you. It's a wonderful set of affirmations, and
you've been
very faithful at posting them. You've got a lot of energy. You really do just do the work like constantly, and I greatly admire that.
Thank you so very much. That's actually my practice. My practice. What I do is. That's part of what I do every day. Those are my rituals. I don't really see much difference between my daily life and my work and my spiritual life. We're all part of the same thing. And my actions and my deeds are my prayer and my sacrifice. I don't always measure up because I'm human, and even the gods have difficulty with being human according to the myths. Still I try. So that's basically how I exercise my particular spirituality through, focusing on a particular energy for the day, looking at what the message might be, giving a blessing, issuing a challenge or a thought for somebody to think about, and then onwards. And it's no longer a circle, it's a spiral. So you keep going, but at the same time, you get further as you go through that. Thank you very much for your kind words.
Hercules, one thing that jumped out at me as you were talking was that you're using a very ancient Greek approach to your spirituality. The ancient Greeks, as I pointed out before, didn't have a word for religion because their spiritual practices were totally woven into everyday life. And I see you doing exactly the same thing. And like you, I tend to do planetary workings every day. So every day I know as a minimum what I'm going to be doing. And then when other days come along, I just, like the equinoxes and the solstices, full moons, eclipses perhaps, then I can just add on to what I'm doing. But every day I know I'm going to be doing the bare minimum of spiritual workings. And I try to incorporate them into everyday life like you do. I may not do it quite as seamlessly as you do, but that is the goal.
Yes, I can definitely tell that about you and about Brandy too. About everybody on this in this conversation, actually. And what I like is that each person has their own way, and is willing to share their perspective openly. And that the different perspectives contribute to each other and give a greater picture that we can all learn from. It's like the old story of the blind man and the elephant, kind of, where sometimes it doesn't seem to connect right away, but there's the confidence that it does. And I've learned so much by talking to everybody on this panel over the years. And it's been years already. I found some of our earliest shows the other day, and it's a good 5-6 years ago.
I know. It's very exciting. We've built up a set of ideas and a set of ways of talking to each other. And as you were talking, I was thinking about how we all understand this sort of substrate of theurgy, and sometimes I refer to the tree of life because it's known to people, and it was the first patterning system that I learned. But the tree of life itself is on top of this Neoplatonic understanding of how the universe is built. So when I talk about the Henads and we talk about the planets, I have this structure that immediately, I visualize that's the hierarchy of the Henads as the powers come down into the world through the power of the planets and the power of the elements, and then physically imprint on physical things. And we gain access to those powers through the physical things. They connect us to the planets and the elements, which then connect us to the powers, the Henads themselves. I kind of think that we need to keep on talking about those things because they're not as well understood as the Tree of Life or other patternings, the mandala of the year wheel or the circle with the elements. But it is sort of underlying much of what we're talking about.
Yes, definitely. Very powerfully and well stated. Now, the energies that are beyond the faces that we are familiar with and work with. Apollonius, in his book about Plethon, is dealing with a lot of this. He'd mentioned it several times about the various levels of gods and how they interact with us and their relationship to each other. So I'm really looking forward to his book coming out, because that sounded phenomenally fascinating, what he was saying.
Indeed.
That'll
be
helpful too.
It's almost like we're working with this jigsaw puzzle. We have a lot of pieces from ancient texts, but we're always on the lookout for more bits of information, and I'm looking forward to Apollonius's book as giving us a few extra pieces in that jigsaw puzzle and enhancing the practices that we're already engaging in.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it too. I feel as if the information he has in the book is going to shed light on maybe some missing puzzle pieces for me, and I'm really looking forward to that discovery. Now,
exactly.
One of the things about living in the modern age is we have access to all of this information, maybe not immediately, but I remember, like, I'll tell the story of the Arbitel. I remember when I was young looking for a copy of the Arbitel, and I couldn't find one. And I lived in New York, so I had Weiser's there and other antiquarian bookstores, and I'd ordered stuff from them before, and it would take months and cost lots and lots of money, you know, to get something that maybe gave you three or four useful sentences, but there was no other way of getting this information other than by doing that. And now the Arbitel is available for free in several translations online, and there are so many different published versions of it, you know, that you can make a really nuanced study inexpensively. That they range from like $5 to $40, the translations. And I think that's unparalleled in the history of metaphysics, that all of this information is so available and so out there that it's overwhelming sometimes.
It feels like everything's come full circle, because if you think of the library in Alexandria, that was a repository of knowledge that was available. So you could walk into the library, pick up a scroll on whatever topic you were interested in. Whereas what happened here was that a couple of hundred years ago, if you wanted esoteric knowledge, you had to be very wealthy. You had to either be very wealthy and obtain rare texts that way, or you had to join some sort of esoteric order. But like you've pointed out, these days everything is available freely online. So it's almost like having your own Library of Alexandria online. So you've got all this knowledge available at your fingertips. But you've got to be very discerning, because anyone can upload whatever they want online. So you have to make sure that you're dealing with reputable texts. So I think that's one of the skills that everyone needs to develop if they're trying to look for information online, discernment.
Yeah, I agree. Brandy, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm very excited at the ability to access information. I mean, I've been researching for 40 years, and I used to go down to the library, the college, the university library, Susilo Library on the University of Washington campus, and I would go into the stacks and browse the books and then Xerox them. Later I got a library card and I was able to take books out. And now I can go online and I can browse the various depositories and get the same books, but get them in PDF form. So it's very exciting, and it's definitely sped up my research. It's much easier now to get access to information. And books that I have cherished and carefully kept on my shelves, now I keep as PDFs, and that's very handy. That's really helpful. So I'm very excited. I can do a lot more pulling together information very quickly. And as Tony says, you have to still look at the sources. There's so many websites that just sort of repeat information, and they picked it up from someone else or picked it up from Wikipedia. So I still look for books that have been written by academics or by scholars who are following a scholastic procedure, and that other scholars are looking at their work and interacting with them, which is why this forum is so valuable to me, because as a non-academic scholar, I get access to academics and then to other scholars who are serious about what we do, and we can talk to each other and check each other's work, and I really like that and build on it. But yeah, it's a very exciting time to be alive and to be a researcher and an historian. I really love the access to information we have.
As do I, and you brought up something that I wasn't ready to share yet, but now that you brought it up, I will. Just give me a second to reach over over here to get this stuff.
Okay.
I'm still too far away from the computer. There we go. Recently, I had the idea of creating a show that was a bit more scholarly. So I've contacted several university presses, and I got so far Greek Heroes in and Out of Hades by Stamatiata Dova, which is a very scholarly book. And then The Greek Experience of India from Alexander to the Indo-Greeks by Richard Stoneman. So those were some of the topics I wanted to wrestle with. First, I wanted to create like a scholarly show. Would you guys be interested in playing with that one? Because I was planning on having once a month and each month deal with a different scholarly text and the things, rather than doing popular books, to focus a little bit more on more scholarly texts and talk to scholars.
That's exciting. I don't have a degree. I'm an independent scholar.
You're an independent scholar.
But I'm that's very exciting. I'd love to do that.
Okay, I will invite you. Yes, Tony?
I was just going to say, it sounds really exciting. If it's a text I'm familiar with and I've read, then I'd love to get involved. Otherwise, I'd need sort of a bit of time to work through the text to familiarize myself with it. But I think that there's so much fluff out there. It'd be nice to have a show where you're focusing on material which is substantial.
Those are my thoughts also. And where I thought it would be great, because we talk to each other, we ask each other questions, and we listen to what we answer and we ponder it and consider it, is I was thinking of having one show that was like an interview with the scholar, and then a follow-up show that would be taking questions, and we'd have a panel of questioners, to ask questions about what was discussed about the book.
And one of the things that's kind of interesting about that too is that scholars, academic scholars, sometimes are not practitioners. So in this show, we've prioritized practitioners. I remember suggesting one person in particular, and everyone said, "Yep, but does he practice?" I'm like, "Geez, I don't know." So it's an interesting discussion. I remember Apollonius saying to me once that he goes to theurgy conferences and that academics will present to each other, and then in the hallway they'll sidle up to each other and go, "Do you practice?" So it was I love that image. And of course, he wrote a book under his own name, under his Bruce McLennan, to throw down and say academics can practice, right? And I really love that he's that brave to do that, and stood up for the importance of practice as well as study. So it would be something that I would actually ask. I think it would be an interesting conversation to have with people who are academics studying these fields. Do you practice, and how do you feel about that? I actually have a story about that if we have a little time.
Sure.
As a tantric practitioner, as a yogini, I work with a small group of women under a teacher's direction, and I've been with this group for 3 years. And a young woman was doing a paper, was doing academic research, and asked to interview us. And so she did. She interviewed like a dozen of the people with my teacher, and she's just published this paper, which I can send you guys the link if you're interested in it. She published a paper, and one of the things that she said was she said, you know, I was trained as an ethnographer to come in and talk to people and just maintain this objectivity and ask questions and get the answers. She said, but I discovered that I had to tell people what my experiences were. I had to make a connection with experience, or people wouldn't trust me and open up to me. And she said, you know, I think that we need to look at this distinction we make between the suspicion we have of people who practice, and that people who don't practice are the better people to come in and say, you know, and to make judgments about that. So we don't say that about cooks. We don't say, you know, a person who's not a chef can tell you how to cook something. We expect them to have expertise. So she's kind of challenging this notion of academic objectivity, which I think is just fascinating. And I'd like to see that discussion kind of be broader.
That is such an excellent point, and I can identify with it. When I was much younger, I was very much into the exotica, or the exotics, which are like elementals and nature spirits and so forth in Greek. And they haven't really changed since antiquity, the stories, but they're still very much part of modern day Greek folklore. And I figured I'm Greek, I speak Greek, I'm in Greece, why don't I try to collect these stories? And initially, the line that I get is that, oh, nobody believes in those things anymore. Maybe you can find like somebody really old, they could tell you some stories, or the church doesn't allow for them. But then when they became comfortable with me and I shared some of my own experiences with nature spirits, all of a sudden it was like turning on a raging faucet. And I got tons and tons and tons of information, including very many personal accounts of experiences with Nereides or Nereids, and even things like satyrs and centaurs. So I became one of them. I won their trust by sharing in something that a lot of people considered ridiculous, and they knew it. And then all of a sudden, I had access to treasure. So yes, I agree with you.
Brandy, I don't know if you were at Pantheon that the particular year that Professor Sarah Iles Johnston came in and gave a talk.
Oh, I wish I had seen her talk.
I really enjoyed her talk, and anyone who's interested in Hellenistic magic would probably be familiar with the text. Like, she wrote Hecateia Soteria, she wrote Ancient Greek Divination, and a number of other texts. So I managed to chat to her briefly. She's Professor Fritz Graf's partner, just to put it into perspective. He also writes texts on Hellenistic magic, and she actually expressed surprise that she was being treated like a rock star, you know, because there were a few of us there who were practitioners and were very familiar with the work. She was far more used to academics coming along to her talks and just politely listening to what she was saying, whereas we're eating up everything, trying to get performance tips and the like from her. But it was a real privilege meeting her. But she's one academic who was very open to talking to a pagan audience. So hopefully there are others as well. So, I mean, she might be one that Hercules could consider bringing onto the show.
Oh, sure.
Approaching her and seeing how it goes. Yeah. She's written some absolutely amazing stuff. Yeah.
If you give me her information, or even just her name and some information so I can locate her, or her publisher or publicist, I will definitely. That's an excellent idea, Tony.
Yeah, what I'll do is I'll send you a link to a Wikipedia article about her, and you can investigate her. And I know you're going to be as impressed with her as I was. She's an absolutely amazing individual, and it was a real privilege actually getting to hear her talk. She also talked about some of her husband's research as well, Fritz Graf's research, which was really nice, getting a bit of an inside scoop.
Oh, and some of her papers are just so insightful and have pointed me in directions of practice that were very, very important. She really has a grasp of the system from the practitioner's perspective, and I really respect her.
Yes, she's sort of walking that fine line between giving practitioners what they want to hear and being rigorous academically.
Sounds exciting, and thank you to both of you for helping to flesh out that idea. Now I'm excited to get it started as soon as possible. I think if we have like a show on their work first, people won't have to get copies to be up on what that was my original thought, that not everyone can afford scholarly books. You know, they tend to be on the expensive side. So if we have the show about the book, then people have enough of a background to formulate questions, and then we can ask the questions.
Yep.
Yeah.
Now, Brandy brought up the issue of gender and theurgic operation, and I'm not familiar enough with modern-day theurgic or pagan practices to have known what she was talking about. I didn't know that there was a like discrimination or a mandate against channeling deific forces that are not of the same gender as you. That was the first time I heard that, actually. So, Brandy, can you explain that a little bit more?
Well, that happens in witchcraft, where you find groups that say, there witchcraft groups will channel God and goddess, and they are led by a priest and priestess in one formulation. There's so many ways to do witchcraft, so I'm talking about a specific kind of community. And the terms to describe that community have changed over my lifetime, and I don't know that I want to try to say how to describe it now. But let's say, like, Gardnerian, very, very traditional Gardnerian Alexandrian witches will say, you know, the god, the priest channels the god and the priestess channels the goddess. And I was thinking that that idea had kind of faded, but I recently ran across some people who said, no, there are still people we find that think you can't, if you're a man, you can't channel the goddess. If you're a woman, you can't channel the god. And that is always really surprising to me. Because I was thinking that in the ancient theurgists didn't make any distinctions at all about who could, what the gender of the body was and what deity you could work with. There was just no distinction. And I was kind of wondering if that was the group's understanding as well, if you had seen anything about gender in the ancient texts, that the ostensible gender of the deity has to map onto the gender of the body.
I personally haven't heard, again, I heard it back in the days when I first started exploring things and the Gardnerians and the Alexandrians and then the home trads were the groups that were there. I hadn't heard of that there. And in fact, there wasn't a lot of channeling beyond drawing down the moon back in the day. There wasn't a lot of, there was embodying and expressing the divine force. But channeling seems to become a lot more prevalent these days than it originally was. But the folks I've had on the show that share their particular witchcraft practice or Wiccan practice, they seem to channel whoever. They don't seem to differentiate between the deities and or equate them with their gender. Tony, what's your experience with that?
I know exactly what Brandy's talking about, and it's something that manifests very strongly today. For starters, consider the goddess community, a group of women who work with goddesses. They don't work with male gods in general, but they work with female goddesses. And then by the same token, you've got a lot of males out there, and I'm not sure if they wait for God to choose them or if they choose their own gods. They will tend to work with male gods. There does seem to be this split along gender lines. I know that split doesn't have to be there. I knew a couple of guys. They're both gay. they worked through the Wheel of the Year together, and they would take turns embodying either female goddesses or male gods, and they felt quite at home doing that. Now, you need to remember that the gods choose us and not the other way around. And so while quite often gods will be served by priests and goddesses will be served by priestesses, there have been many exceptions. So probably the most famous example is that of Apollo. He was served by the Pythia, who was female. Dionysus was served by Maenads, who were female, and very often the nymphs were served by male devotees. Hesiod and many theurgists were very drawn to Hecate. So my personal attitude is that when a god or goddess chooses someone to serve them, then I really have no right to interfere on the basis of gender, ethnicity, or et cetera. It shouldn't make any difference at all.
That's so smart.
Yes. And it has foundation in antiquity, so that's the icing on the cake.
Yeah.
I think that's a topic I'd like that revisited when Jean-Louis and Apollonius are here also, just to hear what they have to say about it. I don't know, you guys are bicultural as well, or?
I'm not sure what you mean. I am American, and I don't have an ethnic heritage like you do, which would really have loved to have. that's pretty cool. Bicultural, I kind of think, you know, any of us who are magic users in a Christian world tend to be bicultural, right? So,
right. That's a very good point. If you're like born like something American, Greek American, Hispanic American, whatever, there are sets of realities that don't always jive together. So I could only speak for being a Greek American, but I've read that other cultures have the same thing. Greek culture, for instance, looks to the past. The past is very real, and it's moving. You're part of something that's moving toward the future. And if you look back far enough, there's mist. You don't know where it's coming from exactly. There are stories, but you're moving from the past to the future. And as long as you stay the course and you're Greek, you'll be okay. You'll get through it. And American culture, there is no like past really beyond a few hundred years. That's a shared past. So a lot of the mythology is for the future, you know, with like Star Trek and and things like that take the place of the mythology, but they're oriented toward the future, and the future becomes very real. And also how people of various genders relate to one another is very different. Like it was okay when I was growing up for Greek men to, you know, hug each other and kiss each other and even hold hands under certain circumstances. And all of those behaviors would be suspect, you know, in American culture, you know, in terms of gender identity. Even what constitutes what Greeks consider to be homosexual behavior and what Americans consider to be homosexual behavior, or what virginity meant, you know, to Greeks as opposed to Americans, those were very different. So you get exposed very early on to the arbitrariness of human institutions. And that, you know, basically you have a bunch of people who agree that something is so, and it's not universally so, it's just so because a bunch of people agreed that this is so. And so a lot of the questions about gender and what's appropriate for each gender remain, do you accept the Greek way, do you accept the American way of looking at things, or do you accept the artificial Greek-American way that rose really during the 40s, 50s, and 60s, their way of looking at things? You know, and again, the Greek-American way did not always keep pace with what Americans were thinking and what Greeks were thinking. So as the decades moved on, the gulf between these different outlooks became greater rather than, lesser. So I guess with a lot of a lot of what we've been discussing, you know, from where my perspective is, it's kind of like people fight over the most meaningless things because, again, these things are just social agreements that were made and that we're adhering to because we're acculturated in a particular way.
Yeah, and where this culture, where American culture has shifted in the last decade just substantially is right around gender. I wrote The Woman Magician 10 years ago, and as I start work on bringing it forward to the 10th anniversary edition, it's amazing to me how different the world is now to the world that the way we looked at gender 10 years ago. 10 years ago, we weren't talking about non-binary people. It was just there was a very firm gender binary, and no one was really challenging it in the outside of the fringe communities like the drag communities. And now it's very normal, especially in younger people, especially in people who are in high school and college now, to just accept that people say they're non-binary, that people talk about what their pronouns are. It's a substantial cultural shift. And it's very exciting because I always felt the gender binary was restrictive, any artificial restrictions placed on human choices. So that's very exciting. But where it sort of comes to this conversation is this idea that there is male energy and female energy. It's a magical idea which is just shot through all of the systems, right? And so it's very interesting to go back and challenge it. I'll stop and give Tony the floor.
Thank you. That was awesome.
Well, I'm not sure how to proceed with what Brandy started talking about. We are definitely living in very different times to the times that I grew up in. When I was young, you were basically either male or female or hermaphrodite. You were either gay or straight or bi, and that was pretty well it. Some people dressed in drag. Most people didn't. Life was very, very simple, but then those categories obviously didn't fit everyone. There were people who didn't sit comfortably in those categories, so things had to eventually change. And I have noticed that young kids tend to be far more accepting of sexuality now than what we were as I was growing up. I went to a single-sex high school, and the worst insult you could level against anyone was to call them the Australian equivalent of a male homosexual. Those were fighting words. So that was the sort of environment that I grew up in, and you had to battle against that. You thought that it was wrong, but that was how everyone was brought up in Australia at that point in time. And just going back to what Hercules was saying, I grew up in a household which was Central European and Catholic. And so we had our own traditions, the quaint Central European traditions. So we celebrated Christmas a little bit differently to how the Anglo-Saxons celebrated it in Australia. We celebrated Easter a little bit differently. But then traditions in Australia changed. When I was young, say, for instance, Christmas was celebrated the way that the British celebrated it. So they would have a large roast dinner, so it would be either turkey or pork, roast vegetables and the like. But you have to be mindful of the fact that Christmas is in the middle of summer in Australia, so it's over 100 degrees and you're having a baked dinner. So a couple of decades ago, Australians decided, well, we can't keep up with British traditions, and everything changed. So quite often now, when people have a Christmas dinner, it will be seafood, salad, chilled white wine, which makes far more sense in a climate where you've got where it's extremely hot. So things are changing in terms of diet, in terms of traditions, in terms of what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. And then, of course, I mean, just then there's what Hercules talked about earlier on, that we have all this information. The internet is truly the information superhighway. We have access to far more information now than anyone ever has had in the past. Things have really changed, and there are many, many positive things that have happened as a result. It's definitely an exciting time to be alive.
And those are really powerful words to start closing the show. We have our 5 minutes left, and I'd love it if you could share your contact information, let people know what's new and exciting in the days ahead, and if you could offer a closing thought, that would be awesome as well. Brandy, you want to start?
Sure. You can find me as Brandy Williams Author at BrandyWilliamsAuthor.com. My Instagram is Brandy Williams Author, and I'm very active on there. Facebook, Brandy Williams Author, and I also have a Papios blog, Star and Snake. I tend to mirror it on Brandy Williams Author, though, so that's a good place to go. And I'm just very excited by this group of people, and I'm so grateful that we continue to meet and talk to each other and continue to sort of flesh out theurgic ideas and theurgic practice, because I think they're really important for these times now.
Thank you very much. I feel the same. Tony?
I feel exactly how Brandy feels, that these panels have been an absolute blessing for me to meet with people of like mind, learn from them, get new ideas from them. Easiest way to contact me is through Facebook, either my personal Facebook or my author Facebook page. And like Brandy, I also have a blog on Pathos called Holistic Spirituality, which I'm going to be adding to very, very shortly. And I also do another podcast with Hercules on Hellenismos. And this month we're going to be interviewing Denny Sargent, who
awesome.
Is a very good friend of Brandy's. We're going to be talking about werewolves. So
all
I'm really looking forward to that. That should be a lot of fun. Yeah.
That is incredible. Awesome. I'm looking forward to that. Brandy has her latest book, Cord Magic, and as she mentioned, it's drawing a lot of positive attention. It's an awesome book, and we still have to schedule a show where we talk about it. So I'll be contacting
yes.
you by email. Thanks to both of you. You're awesome.
Sounds great.
And I'm very blessed. And thanks to everybody who tuned in tonight, whether you clicked on a link, whether you made a phone call, or whether you'll be listening to us later on at your leisure on demand. Until next time, this is all of us wishing all of you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. And we'll close today with Golden Bough by Virginia Ackley.
Turning of night. golden bough.